Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers' dismal 27-2 preseason loss to the Denver Broncos on Sunday night. Eric, let's skip the preliminaries and dive right in. Lots of things to be disappointed in. Maybe the starting for the Packers, the starting point is the backup quarterbacks. What did you think and what did you make of it? All things into context. Packers backups playing against Broncos starters, all of that. What'd you think of the Packers backups, backup quarterbacks, Sean Clifford and Michael Pratt?
Well, thanks, Pete. The first thing was, it was the end of the first quarter, and I had to giggle. I had to laugh to myself. And I was thinking, you know, a couple months ago, there were some folks that were talking about, hey, maybe we should trade Love for a first-round pick, and let's give Clifford a try. Or even last season, after, you know, I think it was like week 5 or 6 when there were some the Packers were struggling a bit, and I was laughing. Does anybody really think that we are not seeing the absolute ceiling of this guy right now? I mean, this is it. This is as good as it gets. He's not going to get any better. There's this. And I get where you look at him and you like him. Hey, run around a little bit, right? But that's it. I mean, he was wide, missing targets above and beyond, and fumbling snaps. And he's a good guy. There's no question about it. But he's not a starting caliber quarterback.
So let's say Jordan Love gets hurt in the game and he can't finish it. I mean, this even happened with Brett Favre, even though he never missed a start. So let's say he hurts his ankle, can't finish a game. Packers are up 7, early third quarter. Sean Clifford comes in. Can they win that game?
Hopefully the defense can score. Or also, you know, hopefully the defense can throttle it down and they don't have any turnovers on their end of the 50. Can they win it? It's possible if they're running the football. If you tell me it's a tie ball game or they're up by 3, I would say no, they can't. I have no faith that he hasn't shown anything to give me any faith that what he can do is good enough to win a football game in the NFL.
Yeah, I do. The one thing I do wonder, I mean, I harbor the same questions that you do. I do wonder if the Packers trot all their starters out there for that first quarter, is it any different or is it much different? Would he put up points on those early possessions? Would the run blocking have been better so they would have had, and Jacobs have been a runner, so they would have had a run game? I still do wonder about that, and I wonder if they're not, you know, if Clifford isn't quite as, if he's not as bad as he looked in that game. The only thing is, you know, the Broncos started subbing in guys in the second quarter and they still had a rough time.
Yeah, I don't think it matters much. Unless the run game is just dominating. Then at that point, I think maybe there could be some consideration to pause. But at this point, when you need a guy to make a throw. And you can tell me he's a gamer all you want, and that just that's great. But at some point in time, you got to have arm talent. And quite honestly, I think the rookie's got a little better arm talent than what Clifford has.
I saw it. Like, there was a couple plays where he left the pocket and threw on the run, and he snapped it out there. He's got arm talent. There's no getting around that.
Yeah, I think he's definitely someone that, you know, a practice squad position would be great for him. Or, I don't see – the hard part is this. You're at a position with this football team where if you lose a quarterback for a couple weeks – that might be the difference between a wild card or not making the playoffs, period. And, I almost feel like they're at the point with this football team that having a viable backup if the starter were to go down, that's the road they got to start looking at.
So it's funny because I'm highly skeptical of them being able to make do some kind of transaction where they could bring in somebody worth bringing in where – one, it either didn't cost them a ton of money, or two, would cost them, you know, a draft pick. And but funny, I was talking with my colleague Ryan Wood earlier today, and he said a fan threw out a name on his Twitter timeline that actually got his attention, and I can see why. It's Ryan Tannehill. He's not signed by anybody. I didn't realize that. He's 36, and he played for LaFleur when LaFleur was offensive coordinator for a season down in Tennessee, so he knows this offense. If there's not a big jump in performance next week by, you know, probably Clifford, but by either of these backups, how seriously do you consider signing Tannehill? And if you look into it and try to do it, what are you willing to pay the guy?
Well, that's the key. You know, Tannehill might be still at the point where it might be best for him financially to wait a couple weeks into the season and wait for some injuries to pop up for him to take a contract, right? You know, but at 36, he's not, you know, for a quarterback in today's NFL, that's not beyond someone that you can run out there. I mean, there's, you know, Aaron Rodgers is the old man of the bunch, but it's not uncommon for guys late in their 30s to be able to go out and perform at least at a level that is serviceable. So, you know, I think if he takes – what is the league minimum for someone like that? Is it like $3 million, $2
million? I'd have to look it up. I'm guessing it's upper ones. Might be as high as two.
Yeah, I mean, for $2 million, it's pretty cheap insurance policy just to get you through a game and maybe start a game or two and give you a chance. I like those odds way better than marching any of those other two guys out there, you know, in the middle of the season, you know, when they got to play the Bears or they got to play Detroit or, you know, someone like that that's at that caliber and you're going to march out Clifford. I mean, you're going to get people hurt. So, you know, I just feel like at this point in time, I think they're at that spot where, you know what, they should sign someone. You know, you look at years previous, you know, Love is pretty young. Last year, you really didn't. If you lost them at that point, I don't think they thought they were as far along as they were as a football team, top to bottom. So you can get away with a Clifford, but at this point, there's a lot at stake, and I think they really got to seriously consider whether it's Tannehill or, you know, I don't know any other names that are out there off the top of my head, Pete, to be honest with you. But I mean, it kind of makes sense to take a look at this point in time.
You know, I don't know any either. I'm guessing. I mean, there might be somebody, but I'm guessing there's nobody else out there for them worth signing. It'd just be retreads, guys who were never very good, guys who have played some but have never won. I'm not sure I would do anything like that. But this one name does kind of get your attention with Tannehill.
Well, absolutely. Because I think he would come in knowing his place. Not trying to make waves and just, you know, yeah. What? Let's just ride it out to see if I can make a few extra bucks before I got to actually maybe stay at home and find a job for real. Or, hey, I mean, here's my chance to get a ring, you know? So I think having some of those guys are valuable.
And he's made a lot of money. So you know, this, but where is he going to make $1.5 or $2 million for 6 months work? I mean, there's nowhere else where he's going to make that. He went 3-5 last year as a starter. So while it's pretty clear why no one would sign him as a starter at this point in his career, as a backup, if they could get him for the minimum, I think it's something they got to seriously think about.
Yeah, I would think someone like that. And there might be guys getting cut that we don't know about, but a lot of the guys that are on the scrap heap are, you look at Denver, what are you going to do there? You know, did you get rid of Stidham or Wilson? Not Wilson, but Zach.
Zach Wilson.
Yeah. So you get, what do you, you know, but I don't think either one of those guys are the type of guys that you want in that backup position. I think you want kind of a grizzled veteran, a guy that knows his place, that's guy that's been there, done most of it, and can be a real just, hey, hang on to the clipboard. If we need you, just be mentally ready. And at that point in his career, you could probably put him in any offense, and it's going to make a lot of sense to him. So, you know, someone like that probably, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned it, because just until now, Tannehill never even floated my boat a little bit. But now my interest is peaked.
Yeah. You know, something I wanted to bring up, and look, I hope people understand, you know, where we're coming from, because we're not here to apologize for anybody, to make excuses for anybody. We're not fans of the Packers, so we're not looking for silver linings or anything like that. But as we talked today for our column, you know, going over the game tape of Sunday's game, you know, we started talking about at the very end, we were just kind of in passing almost, how different the agendas were for this game for the two teams. And you got Sean Payton. I looked it up. They haven't been to the playoffs or won or been over 500 or even 500 since 2016. That's the Denver franchise. And they're breaking in. They're going to start a rookie quarterback. Sean Payton's agenda for this game was so much different than Matt LaFleur's, who's got a team that looks like it should be a contender, and they're trying to sift through the bottom of their roster, you know, the bottom half of their roster, figure out what other guys can help them, what other guys should make the team. I don't know that their agendas could have been much more different. I guess it just shows up in the, Packers sat 31 guys, all their starters. And I just wonder how much it affected not just personnel usage, but even play calling. I don't know. What do you think?
100%. Matt LaFleur's total objective of coming out of that ball game was try to get their kickers some work and don't get anybody hurt, right? Because they're, you know, this they put a lot of weight on that joint practices where they're going good versus good, and I think at this point in time, you know, LaFleur is all right. I got my deck. I got my hand. I know what's in my hand. And you know what? I'm not going to play the ace of spades yet. I'm not going to do anything like that. I'm just going to – let's just get through this hand and hopefully nobody gets hurt. And they were successful at that. Now, some of the things that you wish you would have seen differently is just personal execution be better. But for the Broncos, I mean, they got to start stacking success. And they got to start having that young guy – get out there and understand what it's like to play at NFL speed.
They need him to experience success, right?
Right. So you got to stack success and stack success and stack success over and over and over to get this football team over the hump. Because the reality is if you give the Packers a week to prepare for these guys, and normally it's beyond that. I mean, they install week of, but the scouts and the guys on the backside that nobody talks about, the guys that are breaking down tape, that are doing the analytics and doing all of those things, they're doing that a couple weeks in advance. So when the game is done and it's Monday, those coaching staff, they're pretty well ready. By Tuesday, they got a game. They're in their offices. Game plan is probably 99% in. Wednesday, here we go. We present the game plan and we're getting after it. So that's way different than what they faced on Saturday. So the Broncos are, I think when you put them, it's going to look a lot different. They're not going to just sit back and zone all day long. They're going to do more blitz. I mean, the Packers were about as vanilla ice cream as you can get. I mean, that was like the $2.99 a gallon ice cream, the stuff that isn't even, it's vanilla because it's white, you know, it doesn't taste very good. It's just ice cream.
Hey, I've always liked vanilla ice cream. So
come on. Are you serious? Yes. Sure. It doesn't surprise me that you would like vanilla ice cream.
You know, chocolate sauce on it is a big plus, but even just plain vanilla with the vanilla beans in it, that's good stuff. So let's not be besmirking vanilla ice cream.
Listen, if the ice cream isn't at least brown, it's not even worth eating. I take that back. I can put some chocolate and some nuts on it and all that stuff. But no, you got to. There's nothing like what do they call those chocolate concrete mixtures with Reese's peanut butter cups in it? Oh, yeah. Culver's, just send that check over to my house.
All right. You're making me too hungry. So we've got to get back to football.
That was seriously vanilla. And I don't think they would never see that again. But. And on LaFleur's deal was, we're going to play base defense, we're going to run our base, real base offense, and we're just going to see the talent of each player. And some guys jumped off the screen, and other guys, you were saying, hopefully he's got enough tape that he could find a way to latch on somewhere or get back in the gym and get ready for next year.
You know, not many guys did jump off the tape for the Packers, but there was one who did.
Oh, I tell you, I've been waiting to see those two young linebackers. I saw those guys at camp earlier, and I really liked what both of those brought to the table in the limited amount of time that we got to see them. And I was, when I saw Hopper was playing, I was really excited to watch him. And probably the first time I watched it and I watched them on defense, I was probably just kind of focusing on him the entire time. And I tell you that you got to really like what you see out of him. The quickness that they have with him, similar to like kind of like a Barnett, you know, real quick. I think heady and able to diagnose stuff. But the one thing that I really like was the way he attacks the line of scrimmage. There was that one, the one that I think probably you and I talked the most about was a goal line play. Where he scraped across underneath, came, you know, so it wasn't running to his gap. He came from the opposite gap and snuck underneath him and delivered a blow. You know, he didn't just hang on for dear life and have the running back fall on top of him. He delivered a blow and stopped that running back in his tracks. And that was, I liked that. I loved several other run plays where they ran between the tackles where he just was lightning quick to press the line. He even went backdoored on one run play to stop it. The one thing where I think, you know, is probably just, you know, he needs to see a little more is in his pass. I mean, he bails out on pass coverage really good. I mean, there's some legitimate athleticism in that gentleman. But I think in the pass game, he could be a bit more aggressive. And I think it'll just take time for him to see it. Because in practice, it's one speed. And even full blow in practice is not full blow in a game.
So, and I can give you a minute to think about this and talk about something else if you need a little time. But I'm just – look, this is just one preseason game. He played a lot, but it's still just one preseason game. But I'm trying to think of, like, who's the last linebacker they brought in who you think looked this interesting in his first game? And I don't know if you thought about that with Quay Walker, what you thought of him. I'm trying to think back to what you thought of him in his first preseason game. You know, you go back to, I don't know who you would go back to. I mean,
Barnett,
Hawk, any of those guys.
Yeah, Hawk was a different kind of linebacker than what you saw with him. Hawk was more of a power backer. You know, he played that outside spot and he came up and played the edge with power. This was different. This is, he's just quick. And a lot of times with quick guys like that, you see him backdoor run plays. They just don't get home. And I mean, on that one, he backdoored the guy and was able to knife back and get back into play. Those are plays that are unique. So go back to Quay Walker. He's dripping with talent, super fast. sideline to sideline talent, but not an aggressive downhill attack the line of scrimmage in the run game. And that's you've been talking to me long enough, Pete, you know, those are the kind of backers I like a guys that's going to rattle your teeth once in a while and give you some snot bubbles. Those are, and I really like that in him. And I think it's unique to have that type of aggressiveness to the line of scrimmage and yet have that much speed and quickness that you saw with that. You know, like Quay Walker is not that guy. He is not a downhill guy, and he's going to kind of maneuver around, the worst thing you can do with Quay Walker is run away from him. You know, that as an offense, it's hard because he's going to run you down. Yeah. But the weakness of Quay Walker is you run right at him. And, with this kid, I think if you run right at him, you're asking for trouble.
Did you look up his size?
No, he's only 6'2", right?
Yeah. So, guess what he weighs?
235?
228. That's what they list him as. He was 231 at the combine back then.
228 before he goes to Chick-fil-A.
I mean,
I gained 10 pounds with just walking by that place.
He hits, hard.
Yeah.
And for a 228 pound guy, he plays, he plays like a 235, 238 pounder. At least he did this. And you know what? He's been playing like that in practice where he's been showing up in the run game. The only thing you don't see is it's thud, so he'll kind of hit and, not quite tag. It's a little more than a tag off, but you thud up and then you get off. The one thing we didn't see was the actual finish in the hit. And that's where I think, you just saw on Twitter and other reporters who covered the game, I think everybody saw this guy make three or four really good hits where he stopped runners right in their tracks. But you pointed out a play where he didn't make the tackle, but he took on a fullback, and it was just a good, tough, physical.
Oh, on that lead. Play. Yeah, that isolation in the B gap isolation. Yeah, he came up, and that was the one where I was like, "Oh, all right." The fullback, it was blocked pretty good, and he came up and delivered a blow at the line of scrimmage, which for the Packers, it has been a long time since there've been linebackers that have done that. And I guess the part that really, when I rewatched it again this afternoon, is he doesn't play with his hair on fire. He's under control. That's kind of the difference. You watch McDuffie, and his hair is just on fire. He's at his ceiling, but he's effort guy. He's got some decent speed and is fairly physical, but not have the suddenness that this guy has, and he doesn't look like he's just with his hair on fire running around. I mean, like I said, he goes up and fills a hole, and that's something we haven't seen in a bit. And at least from a guy from his size, you can go back years and see bigger linebackers. And, the one guy that sticks out, who probably the last guy that filled holes like that was like Bishop. But those guys are, he was a big man, and it's a different style of defense that they're playing right now. And, he's got to be able to bail out of there and cover. And, the one play too. So we talked about him driving the line. We talked about him taking on blocks and stopping running backs. But there was a play in the second quarter where it was a pass into the flat that got away, and he was on the far hash in the low hole there, and just drew. I mean, it was a 15-yard gain, so you don't want to jump up and down and get excited. But he got in and made that play from all the way over on the far hash, and so that shows you he's got some wheels too. Because that play could have gone a lot longer had he not gotten in there, because the D-backs weren't even close at that point.
So here's another interesting fact with him. What would you guess his 40 time is?
Judging by the way he played, I would say 4.5, high 4.5.
Yeah, it's 4.68. Isn't that surprising?
That is surprising.
And I was looking up
play that way.
Yeah, NFL Draft Scout. I was looking it up, and so it gives a 40 time at the pro day workout, and then it gives what whatever scout they talked to estimated he was going to run going into it, and they had 4.51. So he plays fast. Now, he did have a good 10-yard split, like 1.61.
There it is.
That's a pretty fast 10-yard split.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, that quickness. just explosive quickness, especially when you're driving the line like he does. I mean, he really presses the line hard, and he gets there in a bad attitude. You know, that's the difference between, you know, between him and Quay Walker, where Quay Walker is more of a chase you down guy. I'm going to out athleticize you. And, he's got so much length that he makes him kind of scary in the pass game too, because you don't want to throw over the middle, because that guy's, you know, he's got long arms and he can jump. So they're different type of athletes and different type of linebackers.
So I'll be really curious. So Edrin Cooper's been out since like August 2nd or 3rd with a hip injury. And he was the guy who, you know, I think that they were planning on getting on the field week one, maybe not as a starter, but getting him out there as part of some passing down packages to, you know, he's fast. He had eight sacks last year as an off-ball linebacker. That's a lot in college, especially with the fewer games. But he's been out for so long, and I'm sure they'll try to get him on the field, but I don't know if he's going to be back this week or not. And I don't think when the Packers drafted Hopper, anybody was thinking he was going to be the rookie linebacker who was going to play a decent amount this year. But he could end up, I mean, they may have to, they very well could have to force this guy on the field, right? I mean, that defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, the new D coordinator, he's got to be thinking about ways to get him some work with the ones now, right?
I think so. And I think I think Cooper could be a candidate for IR. You know, if he's not ready to go this week, he might just IR him. And don't they have several guys? What's the rules now that IR?
Final cuts, as you're making final cuts, it used to be if you wanted to put a guy on IR and bring him back, he had to make it, you had to keep him through final cuts. And then the next day you could put him on IR. This year, for the first time, they're allowing two guys who on the day of final cuts, you can put on IR and still bring them back. So you don't have to waste a roster spot on them for a day. So yes, he could do that. And you got to miss at least 4 weeks, 4 games. So if they think he's going to be a little while still, that's one possibility, is they could put him on IR and sit him for 4 weeks into the regular season, then bring him back.
It sure would be nice. I hope the young man is healthy to get a look at him next week, if he's ready to go. But it doesn't sound like he's getting close, does it?
Yeah, it's hard to know. They don't tell you much, and they don't tell you anything. So who knows? The one thing that I thought made him an interesting pick, and a guy who I actually predicted they would take in the first round, was because of his blitzing and the juice that he potentially could add as a pass rusher, as an extra pass rusher shooting gaps with his blitzing. That kind of thing can really make a difference for a defense, but we have no idea, you know, if it will translate to the NFL right now, because he only practiced for what, basically a week or here more than a week, and then he got hurt.
Yeah, so that's tough. That'll be interesting to see.
Another guy I wanted to ask you about was, so I thought going into camp, and especially, you know, with Marshawn Lloyd being hurt for a lot of camp, first to start camp, and then, he hurt his hamstring about a week ago or so. And I thought, and watching Emmanuel Wilson in practice, I thought, you know what, I give this guy a chance to beat out A.J. Dillon, you know, as the number two. And after last week, I still think, you know, there wasn't much running room, but I thought it was a possibility. But after this last game, I don't know. There's reasons to be doubt. Is there any difference between those two guys other than Dillon's, he's bigger and has 600 NFL carries and he's almost 250 pounds?
Well,
as far as runner.
Yeah, he's a runner on the field. No, there's really not. Neither one of them have quick twitch, being able to change directions. I think the vision for both those guys is not, you know, you go back and look at, you know, we've seen Aaron Jones for a long time, and his vision and his ability to get something from nothing is really astounding. And he's able to, there's no hole, and he's able to bend it, you know, put his foot in the ground and bend it back and pick up something. And sometimes those ended up being really, really big plays because, you know, defenses were over pursuing and he cuts back and it can squirt out of there for 10, 15 yards. And, you know, they, that's what they don't have with either of the two guys you mentioned. I mean, Dylan is a straight ahead guy. If the hole's not there, you're not asking him to really to change directions or to cut back to a spot where it might be open. And the same thing with Wilson. I mean, they were, I thought he left a lot of yards on the field. If he were, he just, you know, and I think it basically boils down to vision. If you can see linebackers flowing, and if they overflow, to be able to know, to have the faith in your vision that there's going to be space there, because there were times where he had chances to do it. And, you know, so, and that's the first thing. The second thing is just that gear. There's that one play in the second quarter that really sticks out where, you know, the tight end got beat, but there was a plenty of running room, and he just didn't have that extra gear to just drop it down and squirt through there. And it just, you know, that's the difference really between, you know, a really good running back and just a guy, you know, it, when the back of their jersey says J period guy, you know, that's kind of him. And unfortunately for Wilson, he just doesn't have, I mean, serviceable, sure, get a couple yards. But you run the ball on first and second down, and you're staring down the barrel of third and eight. That hurts. And that was part of the problem with the Packers offense after Aaron Jones went out last season, where they didn't have that. And when Jones came back, and now it's third and four, third and three, playbooks, you got a lot more options to play. You don't have to run a five-step drop. You could throw in a run at third and three, third and four, and keep teams, especially if they're going to run out there in a nickel or a light nickel and a dime, you feel pretty good about at least some of that stuff. But I think all in all, I think if you put those two in a paper bag and pull one out, you know, you get the same guy.
Yeah, Aaron Jones. Wow. It just whenever I see those plays like the one you pointed out with Wilson, where he started left and he eventually makes the cut back right, but it's just, you know, it was just a half tick late. And I think, yeah, Aaron Jones, where, remember those runs where it'd be an inside zone to the left, and he was already cutting it back as he was taking the handoff sometimes.
Yeah. It's all about vision and trusting what you see in front of you. And those linebackers take false steps, or they take oversteps. You got to have the confidence in what you're seeing and being able to push it back. Because those holes don't – I mean, those guys are pros, right? And they know – by the offensive lineman's first step, where the ball's going. I mean, it's no mystery. Then, I mean, especially when they're in their zone stuff, you see everybody step one way and then the tackle steps another way. Well, they're going to run B gap, right? So they fill the holes so quickly, and they're so instinctual and so well-trained and so well-coached that you can make these guys make aggressive mistakes, and you can make them pay. And that's where Aaron Jones really excelled at that. And, you know, it will remain to see what Marshawn Lloyd can do.
Yeah. And Josh Jacobs will, that'll be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, but I you have confidence in him.
Yeah. One last thing. So next week, last preseason game, do you play your starters if you're Matt LaFleur?
Yes. I think series two, maybe max. Get them out there. Go through the game time routine. You know, you got to do that. And in the mental preparation of starting a football game and making sure that they're – and probably throw a little bit of game planning in. I think just one series or two series would probably be enough, and then send the stormtroopers in and see what happens. You know, but the other thing is, on the flip side – well, I guess what I'm probably not taking into account, Pete, is the joint practice they're having with Baltimore. And that seems to be a more controlled situation as far as injuries go and, you know, all the extracurricular kind of stuff, where maybe I think Matt LaFleur puts a lot of weight on that situation and might just sit the starters. But I think there's value to running out there. I really do. And going through the game time prep and the mental prep of getting ready for a ball game, even if, again, if you going into it, you know, you're only playing two series, but, you know, throw a little bit of wrinkles at them and throw some stuff at them just so that they're engaged mentally And they're preparing for getting ready for a ball game, which is different than getting ready for practice.
Yeah, LaFleur after the game on Sunday night didn't commit one way or the other, and he's spoken about the advantages of both the things that you brought up there. One of having everybody go through, having Love and everybody on offense go through the prep to start a game, then to actually go out and do it, and then hopefully get your handful of good plays in and get them out of there. But he's also talked about the controlled environment of the joint practices and treating that as the preseason game and then not sticking those guys out there. I mean, if you lose a Zach Tom to an injury, you know, in a preseason game, that's just devastating, you know. So they want to avoid all that too. I don't claim to know what the right answer is. I'd be inclined with Love being as young as he is still to get those guys out there for a series and really hope that they get at least six plays in or so and then get them out of there. But
And I think someone like Tom, you know, I think lather him up a little bit, you know, let him, you know, the offensive line, you know, it's those guys need to work and they need to work together. And it's really important. And the tight ends, you know, it's really important in run fits for those guys to work. And I think the game time speed is something that they got to, you know, I know they're all vets coming back. There's no not going to be any. Well, Morgan might be starting at the right guard spot, but I think you got to lather up the offensive line a little bit. Let those guys get some work together. It could quality work in a game type situation. I don't know if one series is enough or two series or what the magic number is, but they definitely going to need some work. And hopefully, it's a long 10 play drive, and you can say, all right, guess what, guys, we're done. But I think there's some value into stepping up as a team and coming up and getting ready to play a football game.
Well, with that in mind, we'll be back next week to talk about both that Thursday joint practice and the Saturday preseason game. Our column will write it and do this podcast on Sunday, and all that stuff will post presumably first thing Monday morning, so you'll have a chance to catch all that. But the time has run out on us, Eric, so we're going to wrap this up. I just want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in. Glad you feel that we're worth a half hour of your time. And I hope you enjoyed what we talk about. And like I said, we'll be back again next week. And then there's a big, big, long, important season ahead of us. And the Packers have a lot of high hopes for it. So lots at stake coming up.
It's going to be really – this is another season, Pete, where it's going to be interesting again. You got a brand new deal. Yep. No, last season was – had its own interest level with having Love as quarterback. Now you got a brand new defense, bunch of new faces. You know, it's kind of like Christmas Eve, sitting here waiting for Santa to come and deliver my presents. So that first game, although it's a Friday night, it can't come too fast.
Yeah, a lot of high hopes, a lot of talent on this team. We'll see if they can carry over how they finished last season.
Yep. Better brush up on your South American Spanish there, Pete.
But what an interesting way to start the year, too, down in Brazil. That's right. So anyway, we'll have to wrap it up here. But thanks again, everybody. And just wanted to say thanks and remind you that you've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. For Eric, I'm Pete. Take care, everybody.
Be good.
Hey, you know how Black Friday sales are the best savings of the year? Well, what if we told you Wayfair's bringing Black Friday to July? That's right. Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is Black Friday in July. And it's on its way. Starting July 24th, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, way more doorbuster deals on top products and 24-hour surprise flash deals. Oh, and did we mention free shipping on everything? Everything. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer and the best time to make your home even more you. But it only lasts 5 days, so don't miss out. Mark your calendars, then head to Wayfair for up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the summer. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday and July sale, July 24th through 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.